Welcome back. It was my plan last week to have as one of my guests a dear friend and one of the great talents in this town, a singer named Erin McDougall. We had to cancel that because she had to cancel an upcoming engagement. Erin, it is so great to talk to you. I wish I could see you, but what happened?
Well, it's always great to hear your voice, and that was a wonderful interview, by the way, with Tony. I really enjoyed it.
Do you know Tony? Have you ever met Tony?
Yeah, I'm sure you have.
He's quite something.
Fun listening to him talk, and he's quite something. Yelling aloud, saying "Amen, Tony," when he was talking about Israel and Palestine.
So what happened? Okay, you had a gig special that was going to be your first concert in many months, in 16 months, and you were very excited about it, and I was very excited about it, and all of your fans were very excited about it. What happened?
Well, the gist of it is, after, you know, not working and being safe and not seeing anyone in the world for 15 months or so, I contracted a staph infection. basically taking out garbage, but I got scraped on the leg and made a joke to my mother. I called her and said my leg is really itching and really burning. Do I need a tetanus shot? And she said you might. And within 3 days, the infection kind of
took over your body.
Oh, it took over my body. Took over my face somehow. So it was, you know, not attractive for the last, I don't know, 3.5 weeks or so. And none of the medicine was clearing it up, and things kept getting worse and worse. You know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
Once it takes hold of your body.
Nothing happened to my face, but who cares about my face? You are a... You are an astonishingly lovely woman, as anybody can see by going and taking a look at your photos. But part of, you know, one of the joys, I think, and principal elements of being a cabaret singer and a jazz singer is the way in which you present yourself. And it is not just the voice. It's also the choice of material. It's also the way one dresses. It's also the way one looks. I mean, that is an essential... The way you look, Erin McDougall, I think, is an essential element of a performance by you. Do you agree?
Unfortunately. You know, my ego would like to disagree with that because I certainly feel that I'm... you know, a much more interesting talent than I ever will or could be, you know, as a beauty. But I think, you know, theatrical performers and actresses and, you know, cabaret performers are all about, you know, laying backwards on a piano and whatnot. And
I started my career doing
all of that
long
ago now. But I'm an improvisational jazz vocalist. I don't want the way I look to be the issue. I want people to listen to my voice. And it's interesting that this comes up because just less than a week ago, I was on a podcast called Ox Populi. With Andy King and a couple other friends of mine. And we were talking about this, and I said, you know, it's been a life of difficulty, believe it or not.
I do believe it.
to be attractive, first judged on the way I look,
of course,
and people almost like don't listen to me because of it.
Yep.
You know, and then there are people listening to this show right now. I guarantee you that are like, wait a minute, I've seen her, dude. She's really not all that. you can't win, right?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, she's not my type. She has dark hair. I don't like dark haired women. I don't like dark haired people. I don't like dark-haired
people. Dark hair this year.
Erin, you've had an amazing career before, and I do want to play. To your point, I want you to hear and to listen to Erin McDougall as a singer, not as a beautiful person, not someone who jumps on the piano or steals your shrimp cocktail to make it everything funny. I want you to hear her. It's from a new recording. Tell me about this new recording.
Well, the the recording is not so new. The album came out in 2018. It was my Outside the Story album.
Right.
But the recording that the new recording that's coming out is not mine to take credit for. It's
sure.
A production from Trey Elder, who owns a company called Quiet Pterodactyl.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically came up with a compilation of 10 very different Chicago artists, all different genres, and took music from each of them, one track from each of them, and is putting out this album to raise money for, for artists and staff workers and venues in Chicago affiliated with the music scene.
See, I have to
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Well.
I just say
I'm going to turn you up real quick. Hang on. So he did the first one last summer, I want to say, June or July.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a huge success. It was a double vinyl, and it was called Situation Chicago. And I guess someone asked him, are you going to do another one? And he said, God, I hope not. I hope we don't need to do another one in a year.
Yeah, yeah.
And here we are.
Yeah.
Here we are. So,
how is this year? I cannot. I can barely imagine any industry, and I do think of entertainment as an industry that has been hit harder. How are you, as a great jazz singer, supposed to make a living locked up? And how is a busboy who works at Jazz Showcase supposed to make a living when he can't work? I mean, the need there has got to be overwhelming.
Well, yeah, I mean, I can only speak for the musicians.
Sure.
Obviously, the venue owners have been sweating blood for the last year. And a lot of money was, dumped into club owners to keep, these places alive. But I felt that there was a lot of money that was not distributed fairly among, exactly like you said, the busboys, the bartenders.
Right.
The
wait staff and
the bouncers.
The bouncers and the door staff, but especially
right.
Not,
it takes everyone to run these clubs. So
what also takes
but musicians have really, musicians were just, doing these, online kind of
concerts,
home
so
videos.
Right.
Yeah, these stream,
right.
These live I said, 80 million people are doing them. Three people check in and give you 10 cents. We're all out of work.
Yeah,
Have you,
I don't blame you. Have you, Aaron McDougall, been tempted at all to try that kind of online thing? I know some people who have, and they were fairly satisfied. I know some people who have and were wildly, wildly disappointed.
Yeah, that's, I guess, the depth of my depression didn't want to be tested anymore with, I just felt that, a friend of mine, a musician, a wonderful musician in town named Sam Williams, he's a wonderful violinist. We were talking, maybe 11 months ago.
Yeah.
And I said something like, I'm just tired of seeing all these people's crappy backyard concerts begging other out of work musicians for money. I just can't be part of it. And he was like, God, I really needed to hear that. That really cracked me up.
Yeah.
I just, it's been hard. I finally started cleaning out, someone's home who was not there anymore.
Yeah.
So I was alone, with a mask on, and that got me some money, the last couple of months. But it was a very, very long year of
well, has it been a, has
no
it
income.
Been, not to probe too deeply as a, some kind of psychological interview, but has it been, has it been lonely for you? I think of May 21st, the last Thursday being the anniversary of your grandfather's passing, and I think what influential people your grandfather and grandmother were for you, and I think perhaps being alone and not even being able to go out and socialize with anybody, those kinds of events can be crushing. Yes.
Yeah. my grandfather died, you know, now it's been 20 years. It's 20
yeah.
years,
yeah.
The 21st. But he's the reason why, you know, I sing jazz. And he's my father's father. My dad's also a huge jazz fan. My mom is more all about the rock. You know, she liked, you know, all the hard rock of the 70s. But, and my grandmother, I never got to meet her. My grandfather's wife, she died about 6 months before I was born. But everyone said I was a spitting image of her. And but in terms of loneliness, I think the loneliness has been kind of wondering who you are.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you're not doing the thing that feels the most innate to you. I think people think, and my mom is listening right now, so sorry, Colleen McDougald, but I think people, a.k.a. my mom, thinks, you know, okay, well, there's a pandemic, so now why don't you, you're a really good writer. I think that you should go write for the New York Times.
Uh-huh.
Awesome, Mom, that's adorable. Mm-hmm. They're not really looking for me.
Yeah.
You know? Right,
I once saw you play
100,000 other writers.
Yeah, I once saw you play miniature golf, so I think you should go on the pro tour and compete against Phil Mickelson.
I love her very much, but she's the worst. She's like, I just saw this woman doing this talk show on ABC, and you should do it. You're way better than her. I'm like, what are you? When did you become a stage mother?
At one point, you have
like,
to love
this.
You have to love mothers for that. You have to love them for that. And also say, Mom.
Like blessing, right?
Yeah, yeah. No, Mom. I admire you, Aaron's mom, for that. I also admire. I mentioned your grandfather because one of the great stories you ever told me is how when you were a young girl, he lived at your house for a while when you were about 10,
mm-hmm.
and he wanted you to learn standards so you could sing with him. He listened mm-hmm. to Oldies Station. And you remembered him lighting up when you sang. Even as he began to get older and fade away. That is one of the most charming, wonderful stories I've ever heard. And so I know that on the anniversary of his death, it must have been crushing because it brings back those amazing memories that kind of launched what I think of as an astonishing career and one that's going to get even more astonishing as the city opens up and you played everywhere. I mean, you have played every notable room here and many across the nation. You have had an estimable career. I saw you playing. I've seen you play a lot of places, sing. And one of the most charming was at Syed Nova that night that I bumped into you there.
That was so funny because I think I was on your show because I was about to do, I often for years was going to both coasts and singing frequently, you know, throughout the year on both coasts. And I was on your show to promote a bunch of shows in Los Angeles and New York.
Yeah.
And you said, where are you in Chicago, though? You know, you're like, I'm a Chicago guy. And I said, well, I'm at this little place around the corner from you, Syed Nova. And you were like, Syed Nova.
Syed Nova. I've been thrown out of Syed Nova, for God's sake. Aaron, we got to take a commercial break.
No, we've turned it into this little listening room. And
it was great.
It was so funny. You walked in, you're like, it's packed in here. I was there for a few years. It was supposed to be just like a few months, and it was it was like a 3-year stint there on Tuesday nights.
We got to take a commercial break, but I want you to tell me what song you'd like us to play when we come back. We have three songs of yours. We have three songs of yours. Which one would you like to hear when we come back?
Well, you should probably plug the one that's on the CD, right?
Okay.
The new compilation album.
Which one is that?
In Chicago. The Parting Glass, the Irish song, of course, for you, Mr. Cogan.
Thank you, love. Thank you. We'll be right back.
Oh, all the money that ever I spend it in good company. All the harm that ever I've done, alas, it was to none but me. And all I've done for want of wit to memory now I can't recall. So fill to me the heart and the light. Joy be with you all the comrades that ever I've had, they're sorry for my gone away, and all wish me one more day to stay. Oh, since it falls unto my lot that I should rise and you should not, I'll gently rise and I'll softly go. Good night and joy be with you all.
On that, but we got to talk, Aaron McDougall. That's a lovely piece, and those are some terrific backup players you got there.
Yeah, that the trumpeter that you just heard, that was Tom Harrell, and just before that, that was the great Dave Liebman.
Yeah,
and saxophone. So that was it was a really fun band.
You know, one of the things you told me some time ago, you said having a good voice is just part of what makes a good singer. There is always a challenge, the timing, the rhythms. The challenge is always there, and I think I am always evolving. Jazz allows for that in its complexity. It is my life. How do you think, Aaron McDougall, that the life you have led for the last year and a half might change your music?
Well, I did a lot of writing in the last year and a half. I've always been a secret poet, secret writer. But
and tell your mom that the New York Times does not often publish poetry, so you're out of that argument for her.
They'd probably be more interested in my what is that, Modern Love?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I bet they would be.
Some of those are just terrible. But I digress. I've done a lot of writing in the last year or so, and the weirdest thing that I was not expecting was how much I did not sing just around the house.
Yeah.
How much I did not.
That's interesting.
You know, so I don't know if something switched in my head or if something, you know, something psychologically, I thought, okay, well, now I'm going to see what I am, who I am.
Apart
when I don't
from,
have to think about singing, when I don't have to promote a job,
how interesting.
When I don't have to, you know, think about who is on the next 15 gigs and subbed out, and you know, because I'm a band leader too, and it, you
yeah,
know, you wear
no
a lot
kidding.
Of hats,
no kidding,
in the jazz world. So, you know, I think there was something. You know, the first 6 months of quarantine, I loved it. You know, sociable, you know,
sure.
I'm like a little butterfly, you know, in terms of wanting to be around people and socializing. But honestly, there was some kind of weight lifted where I thought, okay, well, nobody's working.
Yeah.
There's not a pressure to constantly be, you know, putting out a new project or promoting something new. And it was
calling club owners or trying to get gigs.
The worst. Yeah. It was strangely peaceful. It was strangely welcomed in a way that I just wasn't expecting. But then it started to become, oh my God, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
Because I've been doing, you know, I don't have any other degree. It's not that I can't do other things. It's that who wants to hire someone whose entire resume is, you know, singing for the last 25 years? Yeah. It's like, you know, it became panic. Like, what if we don't get out of this? What if all of the jazz clubs in the Midwest literally don't survive?
I think that's a big worry.
So, you know, part of this, you know, for every musician that's in involved in this Situation Chicago album, and it's, I'm one of the only jazz musicians in this round. Jeff Parker's on it, and he's a great guitarist.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, it's like folk singers. There's, you know, heavy metal band. There's, you know, electronic music.
Sure.
It's really vastly different musicians are all collaborating in this project. But I think that there's this urgency within us to say, hey, man, we have got to get more awareness out. People think now that everyone's getting vaccinated that the problem is over, and everyone's so hyper to get back into clubs. Frankly, I'm a little terrified there's going to be another surge.
I don't blame you.
For all the people who are not, you know, who were not careful during the whole pandemic and who did not get vaccinated. So I'm a little afraid of that because, you know, Trumpism is real, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I think that, the other worry is that, well, now it's going to be, I don't know, 1,000 times harder just to get booked. If we weren't competitive before, now all of us are literally starving to work again. And that part kind of bums me out, to be honest, we're getting into the psyche of the whole thing. That part really, like,
I don't blame you.
You know,
I don't blame you.
That's a drag, you know, because I'm.
Yeah. Of course it's a drag. It would give me sleepless nights. It really would.
I just feel like, found solace in supporting other musicians. I felt like there was a way of connectivity. Even if you were going out to hear someone that had nothing to do with, you know, the vein of music, you know, I would be going down. But it had this, like, this, for lack of a better word, this feeling of community.
Yeah. Just,
and I don't like using that word because, you know,
but it's,
you know,
sort of
it's so
an echo
overused.
It's an ecosystem, too. I mean, it's a, you're,
yeah,
it's an ecosystem.
It gives you this idea that we're all in this together.
Yep.
And now I feel like I'm just a little worried. I'm just a little worried that, you know, club owners are still, they're still, you know, fighting with their landlords.
Yeah.
There's still the stress on the, I cannot even imagine.
Neither can
the
I.
Stress.
I know.
Of, you know, having to pay your rent for 15 months. You know, they're already on a, you know, breaking thread to begin with when there wasn't a pandemic.
I know. So we'll take another break.
Excuse me a
and
little.
We can come back and hear another song from Aaron McDougald, and we can hope that Aaron McDougald, one of the best stories you ever told me, Aaron, I hope the world gets back to this kind of state, was two nights at the Pump Room when a guy named Bob Dylan, who turns 80, he turns 80 tomorrow.
I can't believe it.
He saw her two nights in a row when she sang at the Pump Room. He bought one of her CDs, asked for her autograph, and bought her a red wine. I love that.
And you remember, right, that I didn't know who he was?
I know. Of course. That's what makes the story great.
Like, I don't know. This guy with a weird voice.
Who is he? He's
really
got a weird
voice.
He's got money. He bought two CDs and a red wine. We'll be back in 2 minutes. Music has been an important and even crucial part of many people's lives forever, and I have to feel it will continue that way no matter how bleak the shadows cast on this world may be. I'm wildly optimistic, Aaron McDougald, that in a few weeks I will have you on the show again, and we'll be talking about an upcoming gig. Do you think the same way? Are you that optimistic?
Oh, I know that, you know, as long as I have air in my lungs, I'll either be laughing hysterically at something or singing.
Or screaming at some politician, or some.
Or screaming at the television,
yes,
watching
exactly.
The news. Yes, that goes without saying, of course. You do know me so well, Rick.
But, well enough.
Are you ever disappointed?
Before we play another song of yours, I've had Brett select the tune that will end the show. You came here to go to Columbia College, and you found the music scene here so rich and varied that you decided to stay. Are you happy you decided to stay here? Are you happy that you made Chicago your home? Because you've had, not just nibbles, you've had great, great temptations to move elsewhere. You have performed elsewhere. Why has Chicago remained, why have you remained so tied to Chicago?
Yeah, that's a great question. I do love this city. I'm completely in love with the city.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, Chicago is, Chicago never stops romancing me. I can walk down the same street, Michigan Avenue. I live, in River North.
Right.
So I'm pretty used to the skyline, but I'm just, the city itself is fascinating to me, the diversity in the city, the beauty of the city. I absolutely love New York City. I absolutely love San Francisco. It'd be amazing if I could love, a really inexpensive city to live. It's like my life would be so much less painful if I really wanted to move back to Delaware, Ohio.
Uh-huh.
but after the last year, I probably couldn't afford that either. But I love Paris. I think I sang a song about that one.
Yeah.
But I just think Chicago, it's a great place to be based out of.
Yeah.
I felt, if I was going to move to New York, I either should have done it, when I was 20, or I'll have to wait until, I win the lottery or something, because
that's
I think it's better to be based in Chicago and be beloved by New Yorkers by not living there. I think once you move there, they're not that enamored with you anymore.
Well, I'll tell you, Erin, I know many, many of your fans, and you know me, and Chicago loves you, and I cannot wait until you are back performing once again. So you take care.
Well, I will be at Epiphany. I will be at Epiphany Arts Center. I was supposed to be there this Thursday, but as for the staff, that kind of put a kink in things, so we postponed it.
To when?
And I will now be there on my mother's birthday on August 12th. So it's quite a ways away now. It's about 3.5 months away. But
well, you'll be on the show.
New center.
Come on the show and talk about that before you do it.
Well, we can of see. Course I
no,
will.
There, no, should, no, visitors, really have, no visitors allowed in the studio, but maybe by then that will have lifted.
I'll be outside
too.
On the phone, tapping like, on the window.
Bang on the window. I would
we
love to.
Have a, huh? We should have Mike Jeffers on.
Oh, yeah. I love Mike. Yeah.
He's a wonderful guy, and he's the entertainment director. And
we'll make a date.
He's really done an amazing job, given the last year that they've had to go through. But
we'll make a date, honey.
Yeah,
it'd be great to see you. Great to talk to you. And here's Chosen by Brett is the way to end the show with Erin McDougall. Erin, take care of your sweet self.
Okay. Love you, Rick.
You too.
A silent song, a perfect love, a simple time. La la la, la la la, la la la. No more songs. Could explain or test the time. Untold stories about the past. la la la.